the one we need to have.
Okay.
All right. Well, when I first seen it, I thought it was the real candy. I'm going, boy, we're really scratching around for money, aren't we?
Used to go down by them when we were kids, thinking it was real cool. They had little red.
Good evening. This is the Minnesota Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee meeting. For the record, this date is Wednesday, March 21st, 2012. And for the record, we do have quorum. Tonight we have one bill, Senate File 1402, Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, I have an author's amendment, if we want to start with that, or I think somebody needs to move.
Do you know the
first
number of the author's amendment that you're going to move on?
Does somebody need to move it for me?
Yes. Is it the A5 or A7?
A5.
A5 amendment is a author's amendment. Senator Hoffman moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion or the amendment is adopted. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
By the way, Senator Wolf, before I begin, just wanted to set up some of the parameters of our discussion tonight. After your description of the bill, or the amendment now before us, we will be giving proponents of the bill 1/2 hour in total, and opponents 1/2 hour in total. And then we're allowing ourselves on the committee 1 hour to reach a decision. We may draw from the audience here to ask questions at that time, but really the testimony is in your hands with the half hour that we give you. So why don't you begin, but the half hour will begin after your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, just to clear up some confusion, I think, members, you might have two amendments in your folders. I don't know if they're both in there or not. We started out with the A5 amendment, and once we received the fiscal note, we tried to reduce the fiscal note by changing the effective date, but that did not decrease the amount on the fiscal note, so we are back to the A5 amendment. So that's why you have two amendments in there, but we will be working off of the A5 amendment.
All right. Thank you for that. Please proceed.
Thank you. And what this does, on page one, it changes the percentage from 25% to 35%. Then on page two, we go from it changes the numbers of tiers in 2.6 through 2.11. And then section 3 establishes the effective dates for when the new percentage would take effect, as well as at what time, if anybody wanted to modify a current order, they could not do it until July of 2014. And that's the basics of the amendment.
All right. Is there a further introduction from you, Senator Wolf?
I am going to, in the interest of time, allow the testifiers to take the half hour, and I'll be available for questions once they've had their time.
All right. Would you have a testifier? Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Molly Olson. I live in Little Canada, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm the founder and volunteer executive director for the Center for Parental Responsibility, a group of citizens who have mobilized to fulfill the mission to remove the obstacles that prevent both parents from being fully and equally involved in the lives of their children. Right now, the biggest obstacle is current law and family court practices and the winner-loser model, which creates unwarranted marginalization of one fit, loving parent without just cause. I'm here as an unpaid citizen advocate with nothing personally to gain from this legislation. I've been volunteering my time, sometimes full-time, without pay for 13 years on family law reform issues and doing my best to help citizens get their voice heard here at the People's Legislature. With all the bills that are competing for your time and attention, I want to thank you as a committee and Mr. Chair for finally giving this bill a priority. The amendment today is not the people's amendment. On behalf of the people I represent, I intended to offer an entirely different amendment today. Our amendment would have been identical to the current Senate file 1168, which clearly lays out a rebuttable presumption for joint physical custody and equal shared parenting as a baseline for separated parents, fit parents. I understand that amendment would not have passed here today. Despite that disappointment, I am not here today to talk about that amendment. Instead, I'm here to talk about this A5 amendment in front of you, which is a compromise we have agreed to take. The people I represent made a huge sacrifice in this compromise. We lost 95% of what we hoped for. This amendment is not about a presumption of equality like we hoped for. This amendment wipes out all the details so carefully considered with the input of a long list of bright legal minds, and it excludes the provisions that will most assuredly reduce conflict, decrease litigation, and thereby create savings to the courts, which the courts refuse to recognize in their fiscal note. Change is a scary thing, but if you could take the time to read all that I have read and let me spend just enough time with you to help you fully grasp this issue, I know you would be convinced too. I have 12 feet of research and 3 Rubbermaid tubs full of studies. The opposition claims the research doesn't exist. The studies are done and the results are in. Joint physical custody and equal shared parenting is the number one issue that would bring us back to the best interests of children. Dr. Linda Nielsen, a nationally recognized expert, author, and professor at Wake Forest University for 36 years, teaching the topic of psychology, divorce, and women's studies, said it best in her research paper, and I quote, "Considering the research, it's hard to understand why more policymakers are not in favor of shared parenting. Taking an optimistic stance, we can assume that too many people are simply unaware of what the research shows. Taking a more pessimistic stance, we might wonder if many people are still guided by 2 disturbing myths, that men are inferior to women as parents, and that the most significant contribution fathers can make to their children is money." Dr. Nielsen continues, "It's been said that many of us would rather base our decisions on one good, soul-satisfying emotion than on 100 facts. Let's hope this becomes less true as the research on shared parenting becomes more widely disseminated," unquote. We have agreed to this compromise for today as a very small baby step, the A5 amendment. Obviously, we don't think this goes far enough, but that just means that the people will keep on fighting. Please pass this nonpartisan bill with bipartisan support, Senate File 1402, the A5 amendment, out of this committee tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Brian Ulrich.
He's going to pass, and we'll continue with the next one.
All right. Mr. Ron Seeloff, and the next person beyond Mr. Seeloff would be Mr. Andy Dawkins, Representative Andy Dawkins.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Seeloff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wolf, members of the committee, my name is Ron Seeloff, and I have been a practicing law attorney in Minnesota for many years. I also served on this committee for a decade. Sympathetic with all of you for all of the time and effort that you're putting in, especially at this time of the year. I am here to testify in favor of Senate File 1402, which created this rebuttable presumption in favor of joint physical custody. I understand it's now been amended to provide more parenting time, but I'm also testifying in favor of the A5 amendment as outlined by Molly. What I want to say very briefly to the committee is that I was here during the many years of evolution of the family law changes, and there is a direction in which family law has been moving for many years, and it's in favor of equality. I just want to cite to you the fact that joint legal custody has been in the law for many, many years and has worked very well. The child support guidelines, which at one time was based solely on the income of the non-custodial parent, now is based on the income of both parents, recognizing that both parents contribute and that the doctrine that one party was contributing to the children in kind and the other in cash no longer is the model today. The physical or the child support changes that occurred in 2006 were just immensely important and beneficial, where child support was decoupled from custody, and it greatly reduced the amount of litigation. I guess I was allotted 2 minutes, but I would just like to conclude by saying that two things. One, sometimes the law leads public opinion, and sometimes public opinion leads the law. In this case, public opinion is out in front of the lawmakers, and I think that we are actually catching up with what the reasonable expectations of people are. And then the last thing I want to say is that in the courts and in the law offices, we don't meet, when people are getting divorced, you don't meet people in their finest hour. People are upset, but I think that the kinds of horror stories about people that can't get along, in fact, as a psychologist testified in the House a year ago on the bill, people do get over it, and these issues do disappear, and people do cooperate in the long run. So with that, I will conclude my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Seeloff. I didn't know you were a senator when you came up here, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Forgive me for not recognizing.
I should have. I introduced myself to Kathy, who I know very well from years ago. So, thank you.
Representative Dawkins, another alumni of the Capitol.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. you might not remember
pardon me, Representative. The next person after Mr. Dawkins would be Tony Jones. And Tony Jones could come up to the table as you continue. I'm sorry.
Very good. So you might not then remember that Mr. Seeloff was a Republican member of the legislature, and you do know because we worked together well when you were a House member that I'm a Democratic former legislator. And I'm here today just to applaud you for holding the hearing and being willing to take a look at what we can do in family law to make it work better for families and to really encourage all legislators to continue to have this discussion because we can do better. I remember when I was the chief author of the Parenting Plans bill many years ago now, Senator Kiskaden was a Republican chief author in the Senate. So it was just like tonight with Mr. Seeloff and myself, it's always been a nonpartisan or bipartisan approach to try to make the changes in family law. The conference committee was former Senators Don Betzold and Leo Foley, and we went to a conference and we came out with a good parenting plans bill that during all the time, the years, more than 2 years that I worked to get it passed, kept hearing from the Bar Association and from the bench that the sky will fall if we pass that bill. And it turns out that in the end, it's universally acclaimed that doing parenting plans was a great thing to do. So I want you to keep working at the issues that you're facing because we can still do better. Really, what the presumption should be is that you should try to have a guideline in our legal system that says the courts should try to maximize the involvement of two fit and loving parents. And that's really all that it should be. Judges aren't really equipped and trained to make predictions about the future. The reason we have divorces in front of judges is because it used to be you had to have grounds to get a divorce and you had to prove facts from the past, and that's what judges are equipped and trained to do. So we can still do better, and I just want to say thanks to everyone for listening and hearing this bill out and the proponents and the opponents and having the debate.
Thank you, Representative Dawkins. Mr. Tony Jones, followed by Mary Hansen. Mr. Jones, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Tony Jones. I'm a lifelong resident of Edina. I hold degrees from Dartmouth College, a master's from Fuller Theological Seminary, and a PhD from Princeton Theological Seminary. I'm an author of 10 books on Christian spirituality and theology. I'm a professor and a small business owner in Minnesota. I'm also a dad of 3 kids, 11, 10, and 7. In 2009, I was divorced, and it was an extremely contentious divorce. When I was married, I was highly involved with my children's lives. I took them to swimming lessons and to doctor's appointments as much or more as my former spouse did. I'm currently a Cub Scout leader involved in their elementary school and a baseball coach in Edina. All of this was acknowledged in court proceedings and during the custody evaluation. A guardian ad litem appointed by Hennepin County, assigned to our case, told a family court referee in court during a hearing that I should have the children half time. Nevertheless, I was given the standard dad time, one night a week, every other weekend. I see my kids less than 25% of the time during the school year. Tens of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees later, I still see my kids less than 25% of the time. There are times in our society when bureaucracies become entrenched, when they institutionalize injustice merely out of habit. Although some of you are understandably reluctant to wade into this issue, this is exactly when the citizens need the legislative branch of our government to balance the scales toward justice. I get it. It's unlikely for a white male PhD from Edina to claim injustice. But that's exactly what this is. This is injustice, and I call on you to make it right, and I ask you to pass this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mary Hansen, Ms. Mary Hansen, and to be followed by Jerome Schunecker. Ms. Hansen, welcome to the committee. Would you
Thank
identify
you,
yourself for the record?
Is this on?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Mary Hansen of rural Viola, Wisconsin. I'm a mother of two of whom live in the Twin Cities. I hold a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of California, Santa Cruz. I'm also a grandmother and a lifelong feminist. I raised my two sons to be feminists, and they're both now feminist fathers. Lately, though, I've been feeling some shame that my feminism has helped make laws that have ended up harming the very kind of father we hoped would evolve. At night thinking about how sad and helpless my one son feels being kept away from his son most of the time. I worry that a false or exaggerated claim of abuse will send him to jail, knowing that current laws partially stem from the anger we felt and still feel about the historic unfair treatment of women. My son's truncated time with his son means my husband and I have not been able to bond properly with the little guy. He looks at us like we're complete strangers, and you don't know how much that hurts. I've since then bonded with my other son's new baby, so I know what the joy that I've been missing out on, and I feel robbed. My first grandson is also being robbed. Robbed of the chance to create happy memories with his cousins, aunts, and uncles. That's half of his extended family. Given the chance, they would be part of his identity and provide emotional and other support for his entire life. That's not happening right now. My grandson's mother gives him loving care, and I honor that. But I fear that without my son's fathering, my grandson will not grow into a mature, self-disciplined man. It was my husband, not me, who installed in my son the gumption to overcome his ADD, go to college, earn advanced degrees, and rise to the top of his career field. My husband could teach him skills I don't have. He knew how to deal with playground bullies. I didn't. More importantly, even though I gave my son my ideals, it was only my husband who was able to model respect for women. Concerned about the future of feminism if unfair laws aren't revised. One-sided laws lead to resentment and a possible backlash against women. Historically, and in many countries today, women have to fear that their husbands can take away their children because children are men's property. As it stands, children in Minnesota are close to being women's property. If we women want equality for ourselves, we must grant equality to men. This new generation of fathers is just learning an expanded role in their children's lives. To learn that, they need time with their kids, more time than they're granted now. Keep in mind that women aren't born knowing how to be mothers either. These fathers won't do everything just like mothers. And that might scare us sometimes, but for the kids, those differences are a good thing. We feminists absolutely have to support the men who we older feminists have raised up right. Please don't undermine that upbringing with laws that treat all single fathers like potential criminals. For feminism to come to fruition and survive, we need to make a society fair to both genders. One of my heroes, Martin Luther King, said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." So I'm asking, for all the sad paternal grandmothers in Minnesota, please pass Senate File 1402. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Jerome Schonecker, followed by Ms. Patty Murto. Mr. Schonecker, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerome Schonecker. I'm a master's degree social worker. I've been working with children and families all of my professional life.
Sir, could you pull that microphone up close?
Thanks.
There we are.
Is that better?
That is better. Thank you.
I have run a training program for families wanting to adopt children from the foster care system. I've run a psychiatric treatment center for children from 8 to 18 years old and practiced as a licensed psychotherapist for many years. For the past 20 years, I've worked largely with fathers as a parenting instructor, support group facilitator, and relationships seminar leader. I'm a co-founder of the Resource Center for Fathers and Families, a nonprofit in the state, with our headquarters in St. Paul. A psychoanalyst in the 50s, John Bowlby, theorized that a child had only one significant attachment. Research, because of this untested theory, only looked at mother-child attachment, seeing fathers as peripheral and unnecessary to a child's development and psychological adjustment. When he read the research, John Bowlby himself, 20 years later, 1973, said that the loss or lessening of either significant relationship in childhood can cause anxiety and a profound sense of loss, particularly when children have limited cognitive and communicative resources to help cope with the loss. The current research indicates overwhelmingly that to be responsive to the infant's psychological needs, the parenting schedules adopted for children younger than 2 or 3 must involve more transitions rather than fewer. This will ensure the continuity of both relationships and the child's security and comfort during a time of great change. The ideal situation is one in which infants and toddlers have opportunity to interact with both parents every day or every other day in a variety of functional contexts. Feeding, play, discipline, basic care, limit setting, putting to bed, all those kinds of things are what constitute parenting. Anything less is not that. It's without reliability on this context, limit setting and putting to bed, et cetera, are not parenting. It's just Disney Dad. They just entertain the kids. I hope you can see the critical nature of the consistent, unbroken relationships for both parents in a child's life. This is no longer theory. This is recognized practice. The presumption of both parents in these relationships is an essential starting point. This short statement does not touch the ensuing developmental stages, but the case is there to be made on them too. I hope the gravity of this information is seen in its application to the bill before you, Senate File 1402, before, and that you see the importance of passing it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schonecker. Ms. Patty Murto, followed by Norris Rose. Ms. Murto, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair and honorable members of the committee, my name is Patty Murto. I have served 12 years as a county commissioner in Carlton County and 5 years as a school board member in Esco, where I live. I founded the volunteer attorney program in northeastern Minnesota in 1981, serving 10 counties in northeastern Minnesota. We established Northland Mediation Service in 1983 and the Kids First Parental Education Program for Divorcing Parents in 1991. I have taught that class for the last 20 years, every week. I have worked with many families as a mediator, an expediter, and over the past 30 years, the Kids First program. I tell you with my experience that our present system does not work for children. 70% of all teen pregnancies, 3/4 of all children in juvenile detention centers, and 63% of all youth suicides are from divorced families. 75% of fathers will contribute to their stepchildren's college education before their own biological children. One of the questions I ask in Kids First is, why do you think that fathers would do that? None of the parents ever get that question right. They do that because they spend more time and bond with their stepchildren. they do not maintain a bond with their own biological children with the every other weekend and Wednesday night visitation that's normally granted in family law. It is clear that the family laws established for the last 30 years do not work for our children. You have legislation in front of you that gives children a chance for a better life after a divorce. Let's have fathers maintain their bond with their children and contribute to their own children's college education instead of educating their stepchildren. This is not about mom's time and dad's time. This is about children's time with each parent. And every other weekend makes it only fun time. And children do not learn what parenting from their fathers is really all about. Times have changed, and fathers are no longer the breadwinners of the family, and very few mothers are stay-at-home mothers and primary caregivers. And we no longer believe that children only need nurturing and that mothers are the only nurturers. Fathers are integral parts of raising their children. Most parents have shared parental responsibility during their marriage because they have to. You cannot raise children in a single parent, get them here and there and everywhere that they're supposed to be. And a divorce should not change that. Unmarried father has no clue that he has no legal rights when he signs that recognition of parentage. And they don't find out that they don't have any legal rights until there's a fight and they're not allowed to see their child. Years ago, when I was a county commissioner, hospitals got paid $50 for every recognition of parentage that was signed. I don't know if that's still the case, but I tried then, and I ask now that those hospitals, when they get those recognition of parentage signed, that a parenting plan be signed at the exact same time for the same $50. For the emotional health of children of divorce, something needs to change, and the bill in front of you will go a long way towards helping children of divorce.
Thank you, Ms. Murto. Mr. Norris Rose, followed by Mr. Ed Rothman, or Rabbi Rothman. Yes, Mr. Rose, could you identify yourself for the record, sir?
Yes, I'm Dr. Norris Rose. I am a father of 8 children, 10 grandchildren, former police chaplain and chaplain at the People Serving People Homeless Shelter in downtown Minneapolis, and also a chaplain at the Juvenile Detention Center for many years. And I've had an opportunity to counsel many couples as a pastor and at the PSP, the People Serving People Homeless Shelter. And the main thing in my experience with youth, especially the Juvenile Detention Center, one-on-one, was the fact that there was not a father in the home, broken homes. And I've learned, especially being a father of 8 children and so forth, the importance of a father being in the home. I just want to say this way of a testimony also from my daughter, one of my daughters, when she was going to school at North High in Minneapolis. She came home one day and she said to me, "Dad, the teacher asked our class, which was around 30 or 40, she asked that those who have 2 parents in the home, would you stand up?" And out of the entire class, there was only her and 2 others. And she said she was astounded. Wow. But I want to say I certainly appreciate Senator Wolf inviting me to come, because I realize the importance of this bill. And I thank the committee for this time, and I certainly hope this bill is passed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Rabbi Rothman, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. I'm Messianic Rabbi Ed Rothman from the Seed of Abraham Messianic Congregation in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I grew up in a home impacted by divorce, and I know firsthand the emotional and psychological scars that divorce can cause in children. When my parents first announced they were getting a divorce and that my father was moving out, I went into a deep depression. I was constantly crying and blaming myself for their separation. Their divorce impacted every area of my life, My grades in school suffered. My ability to focus was hampered. So I started misbehaving in class and was constantly sent to the principal's office, where I became associated with the worst troublemakers in school, which eventually led me to become involved with drugs at the age of 13, definitely hampering my development as an adolescent. I was only allowed to see my father once every 2 weeks, so I learned how to use the dynamics of that difficult situation to my benefit and began playing my parents against each other to get the things I wanted from them, further complicating an already unstable home life. As an ordained clergy person for over 35 years, I've seen the effects of acrimonious divorce upon children and eventually upon their own marriages. I've also seen the difference that it makes when the parents, along with their counselor, will take the time and the effort to make it clear to the children that although mom and dad have issues, that they both equally love each child and will find a way to work together for the continuing benefit of each child. Although divorce usually has collateral damage, unless the one or both parents are dangerously abusive, I have seen the effect of divorce minimized as the approach of dignity and respect between parents and children is undertaken. Thank you for listening to my thoughts on this important issue that deeply impacts our society. Shalom and blessings to you all as you deliberate this bill.
Thank you, Rabbi. Sarah Olson Andrews, and followed by Michelle McDonald.
Hi, my name is Sarah Andrews. I live in Bloomington, Minnesota. Formerly Sarah Olson, I was the granddaughter and the subject of the Minnesota Supreme Court case, Olson v. Olson. I was 10 years old then, and I'm 26 years old now. Judicial broad discretion and vague laws in family court gave my mother a reason and an open door to fight as long as she could, damaging my family and myself. Because my family was fighting a legal battle over me, my college fund was spent, my inheritance gone. My grandmother, whom I loved, has died, and my mother is not in my life. Looking back on the court battle I was raised in, it saddens me deeply. In the process, I remember everyone talking about the best interest of the child. If you read the case, it looks like the court considered my best interest as paramount. Don't let the paperwork fool you. None of it was in my best interest. It seemed then, and seems now, like total lip service. I just wanted all my family, every parent and grandparent I could get, more people to love me as much as they could, not less. As an adult child of divorce, looking back, it feels like a complete charade. With the court pretending they are capable of making this determination when they are not, there is no way a court is capable of really understanding what goes on in a family, no matter how many lawyers or judges or experts they try to throw out the case. My parents divorced when I was 3. If a child is fortunate enough to have 2 parents that love them, it should be the God-given right of that child to know both parents and spend time with each parent willing to take that responsibility. The love a parent has for a child does not change due to divorce or anything else. So why then is it even plausible a parent should need to fight to continue the parent-child relationship? I can see now that I am grown, the entire case fought over me when I was a child was based solely on fear and pride. Family who all loved me, each of them fighting over me for fear they would lose me, when none of them should have had to lose me at all. The fear of not getting something you want or losing something you already have makes parents do crazy things. Wouldn't we all act crazy if there's a chance you could lose your child? With a family court system so quick to take away a parent's right for whatever reason they want under the guise of judicial discretion, of course parents will react out of things like fear, spite, and pride. The best thing we can do for parents is not put them in the position. The best way to empower 2 fit parents to work together and truly act in their best interest is to treat both parents as equally important. It is insane to think that after going through a divorce, the child or children involved could be completely separated from a parent. That should not even be an option. I am now a wife and a mother of three, and it baffles me to see all the time and energy it takes and years of discussing the issue to decide something that seems to be common sense. You should not have to fight to see your own children. Please vote yes on SF-1402 for presumption of joint physical custody and equal shared parenting for fit parents. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Andrews. Michelle McDonald?
Yes.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, I am. I am attorney Michelle Lowney McDonald, practicing in family law for 25 years. I'm a family court referee for 19 of those years, a small claims court judge, and a member of the family and children's law sections of the State Bar Association. But my most important role is as a mother and a stepmother. Benedictus Ombuna's tragic custody case inspired me to pray to Pope John Paul II for a miracle. And when Benedictus told me he was confirmed by the Pope, my conviction to keep families out of court was sealed with the Family Innocence Project. Fundamental rights are part of the United States Constitution, which by the Declaration of Independence says that all human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, including life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and recognized as a fundamental right is the right of fit parents to direct a child's upbringing. This year, our Supreme Court confirmed that a fit parent's right to make decisions concerning the care, custody, and control of his or her children is a fundamental right protected by the United States and Minnesota constitutions. Adding joint physical custody to the presumption of joint legal custody reinforces the fundamental God-given rights of parents, even if they are separating or divorcing. When families split up, the goal should be two strong families, financially, emotionally. God bless families, and God bless you in your decision today.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Mr. Benedictus Ombuna, did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Benedictus Ombuna from Invergrove Heights, and I'm here to talk about my tragedy. I was a single parent trying to raise my son, and one day I walked over to the bus stop, and my son was not there. And I did everything possible, called police, went to school. Eventually, I was told that by a court order, without notice, my son had been given to somebody else. And from there on, it was a big fight. Ms. McDonald here helped me out. And after a bill of over $50,000, the judge reversed the wrongful custody order, dismissed the case, and removed himself for his errors. But at that time, the damage had been done to my child, my family, and that damage was irreversible and not repairable. And since then, we have been involved through Family Innocence Project to make sure that nobody else goes through what I went through. And that child of mine that was taken was my last child. And according to my custom, where I originally come from, your last born is the one who makes sure that during the days of your need, he's there for you, or she's there for you. And I don't have that now. And to me, I don't know. I have no life now. Whatever I had has been taken. And I pray that this committee will pass this bill, SF-1402. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. That ends the proponent's discussion. Opposition will begin. We will start with Susan Gallagher. If you could come to the table. And following Ms. Gallagher will be Mr. Michael Ditburner. Ms. Gallagher, would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Susan Gallagher. I am an attorney, a sole practitioner out of the Gallagher Law Office in Eagan, Minnesota.
Ms. Gallagher, could you pull the microphone close?
Yes, I can.
Much better. Thank you.
Thank you. I am the chairman or chairperson of the Family Law Committee for the Minnesota Association for Justice. I am an attorney. I've been practicing for 18 years. I'm a registered nurse. I'm in my third decade. I am a parenting consultant, parenting time expediter, mediator. I'm an evaluator for social early neutral evaluations and financial early neutral evaluations in Hennepin, Scott, Carver, and, of course, Dakota County. I represent pro bono clients through the Hennepin County Bar Association's Volunteer Lawyer Network and have contributed hundreds of hours over the last 5 years representing clients in that capacity. I also want you to be aware that I represent men and women in child custody cases. So on both sides of it, it's just not a unilateral issue. I want to talk just briefly about the Early Neutral Evaluation Program. For those that you may not be familiar with it, it is a program that was launched in Hennepin County some years ago for the purposes of assisting families in minimizing court and litigation costs, and it's been hugely successful in doing so, in reducing costs and having experienced attorneys and mental health professionals assist families in that process. It is now county in the entire Metro County area and has been very successful, having a very high 60-plus percent settlement rate for custody issues. Wanted to talk briefly about this bill, and the bill is obviously about the best interests of the children, and that needs to be the focus of all of this, and I believe that's what we have been focusing on. The current law is the best interests of the children plus at least 25% parenting time, which is the minimum standard. I believe that you've been provided with a sheet with information about the percentages of parenting time, and at 3 overnights per 2-week pay period, the parenting time is 21.4%. 4 overnights per 2-week pay period is 28.6%. 5 overnights is 35.7%. 6 overnights, 42.9%. And 7 overnights, obviously 50%. The calculation for parenting time, in case you're unfamiliar, is that is all done by overnights. It is not done by evenings at all. So those don't count towards anybody's parenting time in the calculation towards child support or towards their percentage of parenting time. I find that there's some recent studies that have come out that, and as a medical professional, I value medical science and medical studies in particular. Many beautiful studies recently out of Australia with Jennifer McIntosh talking about neuroscience and trauma for children's brains with stress, with transitions and problems alike. And I think it's interesting in the light of all this new research and studies that we're now trying to increase parenting time a minimum of parenting time when we know that can be problematic for children. I do not believe this bill is in the best interest of the children because it raises the bar for people who may not be appropriate for. The considerations for the children are, first, that they must have a consistent routine, and they need a home base, and they, if the child is very young and nursing or in early attachment, that lots of overnights are not in their best interest or appropriate. And where children have educational, mental, or physical health issues, those may not be in the best interest to increase parenting time. For example, I have one client that has a child that has some significant ADHD. They are currently in a 50% parenting time situation. And one parent works with that child regularly to read and help this child catch up at school, and the other parent does not do that. And the stressors that are placed on this child are significant. They're constantly playing catch-up at one parent's house and not doing so and not staying up with their studies at the other parent's house. And that's just a minor example of some of the difficulties. And also for parents, what happens with the 25%, in my experience, it certainly is not what always happens. There's many cases where there's more parenting time, but this is the bar that's set at the minimum. The circumstances that we need to consider are where one parent travels a lot or their work schedule isn't conducive to it because they're working, as I did for many years as a nurse, evenings or night shifts, and they're not conducive for overnights for children, where one parent may be involved in a lot of activities, hold down a second job. Of course, the most significant ones that we have concerns about is where one parent has mental health issues or chemical dependency issues, and that they may not be in a circumstance or a situation to improve themselves and to attend to therapy and to comply with therapy recommendations so that they can be a good parent to their children. This is an application for this parenting time standard of a minimum of 25% applies to both married parents and in paternity actions as well, so it's across the board application. It's not just for married people alone, so there's equal opportunity with that. I also want you to know that I represent many clients who the men have far more parenting time than the women because there is the woman has mental health issues or parenting time issues, such as I previously discussed. The other concern is when the child reaches school age, that we have children that live across town in, say, in my neck of the woods in Eagan, and the other parent lives in Woodbury. And you can imagine that overnights would be a significant stretch for a child who now has to arise at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning in Woodbury, along with their parent, travel across town to be delivered to school if there's overnights during the week, and the problems that that occurs for the children when there's that kind of parenting time. It's not beneficial for them to have to get up an hour or two ahead of time and the impact on their education. I know people are saying that because they need this time to parent and this time to bind with their children, it's not time dependent. As much as I know people want you to believe that, we find that parents that are involved and they're dealing with their children, they attend their activities and they participate in other aspects of their children's lives, they give value added to their children in this thing, and it's not just a significant issue of overnights. I ask you, please, to not pass this bill. We think the courts are doing a good job. Of course, it is not a perfect job, just as all of us do not a good job every day of the week, either as an attorney or as whatever aspect of our life. So thank you for your time today, and I appreciate the opportunity to be heard. I also have to say I have family obligations, so I do have to leave at the end of this, so I apologize if I can't answer questions later on.
Thank you, Ms. Gallagher. Mr. Ditmerner, followed by Cindy Cunningham. Mr. Ditmerner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm the legislative chair of the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. I also produce the case law update for the annual Family Law Institute, which is the Bar Association's continuing legal education seminar they put on each year for family law attorneys. Some could say that I'm sort of a student of family law and how our statutes intersect with appellate law. Other people could call me, I suppose, a family law geek. But I've looked really hard at Senate File 1168, at the A5 and the A7 Amendment. And, you know, both pieces of legislation are problematic, but for different reasons. Senate File 1168 was problematic because it created a rigid parenting time presumption of 50-50 parenting time that could only be rebutted by clear and convincing evidence. The A5 and the A7 amendments are very problematic because of the linkage between time and money that they create. It encourages people that pay child support to seek an increase in parenting time in order to get a lower child support award. It encourages people that receive child support to argue for downward deviations from the child support guidelines because of the great decrease in child support awards that will be caused as a result of increasing parenting time from 4 overnights during a 2-week period to 5 overnights during a 2-week period. That's basically what happens when you create a parenting time presumption of 35%, which is an increase from the current parenting time presumption of 25%. And when you have a parenting expense adjustment that goes from 15% under this new bill to 35% once you cross that 30% parenting time threshold. I can't think of actually a more efficient transfer of wealth from individuals to attorneys, quite frankly. And I'm really troubled also by the overtaxing of our judiciary that will occur as a result of this bill. So it doesn't surprise me that there's a fiscal note associated with this. But I want to take a look at the sections of the bill, 3B and 3C, which purport to limit modifications of parenting time. And I want to point out as to why I think that they're going to have very little effect. First, I want to point out that people respond to financial incentives. If they will receive a big drop in child support as a result of increasing parenting time presumption from 25% to 35%, they are going to go to court and seek an increase in parenting time. I think to assume anything else is willful blindness. People aren't going to be so transparent as to say, Your Honor, please increase my parenting time or decrease my support obligation because of this new legislation. They're going to say instead, increase my parenting time with my child because it's in their best interest and because there's a presumption that's in their best interest. Decrease my child support because of the fact that the presumption applies that would cause a decrease because my support obligation will be 20% lower. As far as the law is concerned, Section 518.175, Subdivision 5, the Parenting Time Modification Statute, states that the ground for modification of parenting time is whether it's in the best interest of the child. You don't have to show a substantial change of circumstances in order to get a modification of parenting time. Just show that it's in the child's best interest. That's current law. In Dahl versus Dahl, D-A-H-L, a Court of Appeals decision from 2009, the Court of Appeals held that the presumption of 25% parenting time applied to modifications of parenting time, and therefore it can be raised every time a modification motion is brought. So you can expect the same with a 35% presumption of parenting time. Minnesota Statutes 518A.39, Subdivision 2B, the Child Support Modification Statute, provides that there's a presumption of a substantial change of circumstances and a rebuttable presumption that existing support obligation is unreasonable and fair if you apply the party's current circumstance to the child support guidelines and it results in a support order that's 20% lower than the existing one. Back when they passed income shares in 2005-2006, there was a provision that said you can't rely upon a change in the law to get a substantial change of circumstances. That was subsection 2I. However, the Court of Appeals decided in Frank Bretwish versus Ryan, in 2007 Minnesota Court of Appeals case, that the presumption of a substantial change of circumstances is irrebuttable, notwithstanding this language supposedly limiting modifications. And then what happens to those parents who get their increased parenting time pursuant to court order that don't exercise it? That's, I think, one of the concerns that was raised by Professor McIntosh from Australia. She saw what happened when Australia created a presumption in favor of substantial parenting time or joint custody. What happened is that there would be a drift. People would eventually gravitate to more traditional parenting time arrangements over time so that one parent was left with majority parenting time. Well, the problem is that you can have an increase in parenting time and then the increase is not followed. You go to a more traditional model, but yet you have a child support order that doesn't change. You're going to have a lower support order even though there's reduced parenting time. In Hesse versus Hesse, H-E-S-S-E, which is a 2009 Minnesota Court of Appeals decision, they basically said that a child support magistrate is powerless to consider an argument that somebody's exercising less parenting time than they were awarded by court order, even when the actual parenting time, if considered, would result in a modification or reduction of parenting time. So that's the problem. I mean, the practical thing is that people will fight over a length of time with money. And this income shares bill that we worked so hard on for so many years to pass that took into consideration the income of both parents, to see such a dramatic change in the child support law with so little deliberation if this committee were to pass it, I think is the wrong thing to do. I think that this needs a lot more time and consideration when you're seeking a dramatic change in child support than just simply having a hearing tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dittberger.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thompson?
May I ask the gentleman just one question?
We're almost done with our
You testimony. Wanted to wait to the end of the... I apologize. That's fine.
And I don't think you were in the room when we were setting up the parameters of our discussion. These folks aren't going to go anywhere, and we can always pull one or two of them up to answer a question.
Thank you.
Ms. Cunningham.
Let's see.
Is that correct? Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, I will. It is, my name is Cindy Cunningham. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, Mr. Chair and committee members. I just heard about the committee hearing tonight, this morning, at 5:30 in the morning when I was on my email. I have testified and been familiar with the House hearing, so I'm not detailed on all of my arguments against some of the pieces because the amendments have changed, so I apologize if I misspeak to what is actually now being presented this evening. I am speaking against the equal and shared parenting time of this bill. Though some of you know me as a licensed child care provider where I work with children and families daily to meet their needs, I have been in the family court system dealing with custody issues involving our three children for the past 9 years. My belief is that children need and deserve positive relationships with both parents. Both parents are a part of who the children are as people. You cannot take a child and say this part is the father and this part is the mother. They are all intertwined. For a child to grow up whole, they need to resolve and integrate all aspects of who they are as a person. They are the ones who need the focus and support when parents are in the process of establishing two households. Legal experts and constituents who feel that they have been wronged by the system are not the whole picture. The support and organizing has been done from mainly one side. Parents like myself don't even know that this legislation is being in debate. Most of us do not have special interest groups in place to keep up on this issue. But you as legislators are making a decision that will dynamically affect the fabric of our families in custody disputes. This is a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach to families, as wrong or more so than the painful stories you have heard. The bill takes the primary decision-making process away from the families and the courts to decide what is best for the children. This is a parenting rights bill, not a bill to ensure that children grow up with relationships with parents and healthy in all aspects. Time does not build relationships, nor does it support healthy children who can lead successful lives. Where are the children's rights for not only relationships with both parents, but for the care and support that they deserve? A one-size-fits-all custody structure does not meet the broad scope of situations that come with the term family. Promoters have stated that they will continue to push for more time for parenting time. Once parenting time is given to each parent, what percentage is left to look at the children's best interest? Taking custody of time, parenting time away from a parent rarely happens once it is established. If custody or parenting time is presumed 50-50, and again, I apologize for the terminology switch because of the bill, and then there are any ills or concerns that on a parent's part, they would need to be proven to be egregious and the parenting time taken away from a parent. Rather, start with the presumed 25-25% and negotiate through parenting plans and mediators the best interest of the child. This adds parenting time to both parents rather than taking it away, a positive, not a negative. Why would parents discuss anything if there was no compromise for the best interest of the child? Who would even begin to look at the child? Please stop the increases of mandatory parenting time now. This mandatory parenting plans and mediation, as talked by Mr. Dawkins, is a positive approach. It ensures a system whereby parents have to work together and attempt to focus on children, not just themselves. During the development of a parenting plan, there would be and should be professionals who can guide parents through this painful time of dividing their lives and families. It is not perfect. Many parents have been wronged in rulings. However, we cannot legislate out the pain of divorce, nor can we heal everyone's hurts. At issue is the automatic assumptions for the parent's right to half of the child. The assumption is that this is a bill being created for fit parents. The children need the protection, not the parents. Excuse me. Where is the allowance for children who are in breastfeed, a child that doesn't transition well, a child with emotional or behavioral issues? Does 50% meet their needs? Child support is involved in the equation. Originally, the 45.1% that has consistently been being presented is the threshold of equality in child support. If they didn't want it to be about child support, the different that percentage should not be the one that is being consistently presented. Though in this amendment, I understand it is not at the 45.1. My own custody situation is fraught with challenges of this nature. My experience in the court system for the past 9 years has been that the courts have attempted to work with an equitable split in parenting, but there has been at least some attempt to meet the safety and care for our children. Having children with special needs, be they physical, mental, or emotional, is more common than not and has been my parenting challenge. I do not want to bring the details to the public laundry, but I can assure you that attempting to meet my children's needs, keep them safe and healthy, plus support them in their relationship with their father has been difficult. Many negative situations have arisen with the other parent that I have worked with professionals to have to fix. The bruises don't last the full 24 hours. The child isn't deemed delinquent, but they're still not passing any classes. I have a child who is hard of hearing, and there is not an acknowledgement that they're hard of hearing. I have children who have ADD. There's not an acknowledgement or medication or treatment or an approach with educational providers. In spite of the problems created, the other parent still is given the latitude to have his parenting time. The apparent motivation in my situation is for child support. Each time I've attempted to hold my children's father accountable for the medical bills, we have ended up back in court for custody challenges. Where's the protection for our children? It's hardly present now in courts and would be non-existent under the changed law. I implore you to start over on SF 1402 and remove the presumed parenting time, set it back to the 25-25, give the courts and families the latitude the children need to decide what is in their best interest, not the parents. The system isn't as broken as all the additional lined wording would cause in a different manner. Even though the back date is to January 2012, and it's now I know tonight it's not being enacted or suggested until 2014 for the change. I'm going back again because I asked for medical payments from my ex. He's got a scheduled again for custody hearing for presumed physical custody and 50-50 parenting time. And this is after last fall I had to call police to get my daughter pulled out of his house. The way our custody process is gone, I am scared that he will get the 50-50 time, even though the harm has been documented and has been there. The courts still have allowed the latitude. So even though there are many people you've heard from tonight that have been damaged, the people that are most damaged still are the children. Giving a presumed parenting time at a higher level does not protect the children. The courts and the parents need to be making that decision. Please don't give the parents more rights than the children. Please protect and cover the children. That is what legislators are enacted to do.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Ms. Hugdahl, Melinda Hugdahl. And for the record, we probably have 7 minutes left.
Okay.
And I did give the proponents an extra 5 minutes. So we will continue this till about 7:40.
Okay. So we have about 12 minutes.
That's
total.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Hugdahl, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Melinda Hugdahl from Legal Services. I want to talk about the A5 amendment specifically, since that's what's before the committee this evening. And it does two things. It raises the minimum standard from 25% presumed time to 35% and creates a new parenting expense tier, which is a reduction from child support. The changes proposed to this bill are really significant changes to family law and the child support changes that were made by the legislature in 2005 and 2006, which a lot of people call income shares. We used to do under net income of one party, and we switched to gross income of both parties. The costs of raising a child are a chart in the statute. There's a number taken from that. It's divided proportionally. That's supposed to reflect the cost of raising the child. The obligor gets the parenting expense adjustment, which is the new tier we're talking about here. That adjustment is currently a 12% reduction from parenting time between 10% and 45%. In developing that income shares model, there were really two overarching goals. One was to de-link child support and custody and parenting time, to separate parenting time and child support. So parents could make decisions and focus on the parenting time without thinking about the child support implications as much as possible. The other goal was really giving parents flexibility to make adjustments in their schedule. An overnight here or there would not put them in the situation of fearing they're going to see a child support modification motion. And the chart that you've seen that lays out the overnights related to the percentage, you can see by trading a few over months, you move in and out of this new bracket, which reduces child support. Existing law has two tiers. There are deductions from the non-residential parent support. Again, it's a wide range. The income shares model also incorporated pieces of previous law
and new law permitting consideration of additional expenses and needs of obligors, including exclusion expenses for self-employed parents, a self-support reserve, which is a minimum amount to which child support can't dip an obligor before below that level, additional child support deviations, and other things were put in as tools for parents to use as they were implementing this child support model. As the income shares models are being discussed, and I have to say that was a six-session project. There were working groups. There were lots of stakeholders. There were various iterations of the bill that came out. There were discussions about if you have multiple tiers, does that more accurately reflect the parenting expense? And although people realize that, the decision was made that it was more important to de-incentivize people from litigating time for money. And so that's why there's this wide range between 10 and 45% in the law. So putting this block into the middle is kind of removing the bottom Jenga block from which all of the income shares pieces were built upon. You're really putting back the incentive of time and money, which was something that was pretty universally agreed on through the income shares discussion, which, as I said, went on for six sessions, I think, before, from the original bills to final enactment. I wanted to talk some about outcomes because I think it's important. I ran some numbers, current law versus the A5 amendment, to see what happened to child support. And as you know, legal aid serves primarily low-income families, and so I wanted to give some of those examples. A parent with two children who earns minimum wage, which is just over $15,000 gross income a year, and the other parent who earns just over minimum wage, this amendment results in an annual reduction of child support of $1,392 each year. This is a family that's already below the poverty line, and this change puts them further into poverty. A parent with two children who earns just over minimum wage is about $18,000 a year gross, and the other parent earns slightly more. This amendment will result in an annual child support reduction of $2,508 each year. This is also a family that's already below the poverty line, so this change again pushes that family further into poverty. A parent with one child who earns $24,000 per year and the other parent earns $36,000 a year. This amendment results in an annual child support reduction of $1,380 a year. This puts the family, the primary parent family, gross income at just over $20,000 a year, which moves them much closer to the poverty level. A parent with three children who earns just over minimum wage or $18,000 a year, the amendment results in an annual child support reduction of $1,896 a year. This family, again, is already below the poverty line, and the amendment puts them even further into poverty. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hugdahl. Ms. Laura Seaton, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Laura Seaton. I have been a family law attorney for 31 years. I practice half-time in Wisconsin, half-time in Minnesota. I live in Winona, and my office is in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I represent both men and women in custody, child support, all matters having to do with family law. I compare the two child support statutes, the one proposed here and the one that I work under in Wisconsin. Wisconsin ties support to overnights, and we call it the attorney full employment law, because we are constantly in court. I've got an extra overnight. I've got five extra overnights. Go in and change support. And this is a constant problem. When you tie custody to support, you're in court all the time. It gives more incentive to not only fight for more overnights, but also to fight for support. When they passed the law we currently have in Minnesota, a lot of those discussions ended because you get to the point, there's no point to fight about these overnights because here's what support's going to be. And I think Wisconsin has learned, unfortunately, what a problem that is. They tried to fix it by saying, okay, if you have 35% custody, then you have to pay 35% of variable expenses. And that they're trying to make up for the loss in support to the primary parent. And what has happened with that is even more litigation. What is a variable expense? Is it tuition? Is it clothes? Is it haircuts? And we're constantly fighting about that. And what really happens is it costs too much money to fight over that, to try and make it fair. And so then the primary parent typically has a problem. Under the current Minnesota law, leaving the support in the increments that they have, it does away with that, because then the primary parent can pay for all of these extra things, and you're not going nickel and diming each other to death and hiring attorneys to fix this for you. I think the presumption, there's no presumption of a specific amount of placement in Wisconsin. It is presumed, however, once you have 25% placement, your child support starts going down, and it goes down incrementally for each overnight, and we're constantly fighting about that. And so I think that's a huge problem. They don't have, I know we have the 25%, but I think this law doesn't make any sense, because you're treating everything like it's cookie cutter and it's not going to work. It's just going to create more business for me, which is fine, but I think the purpose and what we're trying to do is try and keep these out of court. Time to support is a big problem with this bill, I think.
Thank you, Ms. Eden. We'll now open the discussion up for members for 1 hour. I believe, Senator Thompson, you had a question to begin with. Did you have a question for a particular testifier?
I believe his name was Mr. Ditbrenner. Is that Ditbrenner? Pardon me?
Correct. Mr. Ditbrenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understood your argument correctly, it was that the new situation with increasing the presumption from 25% to 35%, combined with the additional category of adjustment on child support, would somehow create a financial incentive rather than best interest of the children. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, that is correct.
Okay. But under the current system, thank you, Mr. Chairman, under the current system, there still is an additional adjustment two times if you move the percentage of time of parenting up. Am I correct that it makes a move above 10%, then it makes a move above 30%? So aren't the incentives the same now, just different categories?
Mr. Ditbrenner. Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, actually no, because for all other things being equal, if you have parenting time between 10 to 45%, you pay the same amount of child support. It's just when you have below 10%, and above 45%, that you'd have a different level of support, all of the things being equal.
But,
Senator Thompson,
Mr. Chairman, thank you. If you go above 30%, or 10 to 30%, you get 15% adjustment under current law.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, actually, that's under the new law. There's going to be a tier between 10 to 30% parenting time under this new law, and then a tier between 30% to 45% under the new law. So it's when you have these two tiers in the middle there that you create this horrific problem of incentivizing litigation over time and money.
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thompson.
I must be reading this wrong, then. I thought if I look at the adjustments, from 10 to 45%, but still you'd have incentive to try to get it up above 45% to get a new adjustment, right?
Mr. Ditbrenner. Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, and what we talked about when we were first talking about this legislation back when income shares was being decided, and you know, I was serving in work groups all the way back in the mid-90s, and a lot of us were involved in income shares legislation, and basically the whole idea was is that when you have a broad tier between 10 to 45%, you're really not going to have as much people arguing over overnights, because if somebody's seeking above 45% parenting time and they haven't had much involvement in the life of a child, or the child doesn't have a very strong relationship with them, or there's a real big distance between the parents' homes, their motives are going to look pretty transparent when they're asking for equal parenting time. It's going to look more and more like they're actually, you know, arguing in bad faith for that 50% parenting time because of that lack of the relationship that existed before the litigation. And so that's why we worried less about people arguing. People still do on occasion do that, but it's a lot less than it would otherwise be.
Mr. Chairman, just one more follow-up. Sorry. Thank you. So in theory, I'm correct. There still is an incentive to move it up, but what you're saying is that movement has to be so great that it's more difficult to do and you're going to get less challenges on it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, that is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wolf, maybe you have somebody that could answer this question for me. What is going on in the courts right now, and how often is parenting time being divided unequally?
Ms. Olson, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. We did a study and looked at that, and right now on the average for the study that we did, parents are getting about 30% time. But what we also found is that when one parent doesn't have a lawyer, they get far less time, and when a parent has a lawyer, they get far greater time. So there's a great disparity in the time simply based on whether or not there's legal representation. And what we also found is that in the study, studying these cases about what's really going on, is that people are ending up with approximately the 30% time, but only after very, very, very long litigation, too, and sometimes a little bit higher. But because the presumption's only, right now we got a presumption of 25% for one parent and 75% for the other parent. No parent, it's a winner-loser model. No parent wants to be the loser parent. So, of course, the litigation begins. So they have to fight and spend tens of thousands of dollars just to get a measly 25%, measly 30%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Olson or Senator Wolfer, if you have somebody else that could maybe answer this, even maybe Mr. Dawkins. I heard a lot of talk about money tonight, and the motivation is always about money. And, you know, I actually am one of those folks who thinks that dads are very, very important to children. And so if maybe we could have somebody answer the question about the parenting plans. I know we have something about that in current law. And what if the parents develop their plan and they both agree and it doesn't fit within this framework that we're setting up here? What has been your experience? Maybe, Mr. Dawkins, you have the answer to that.
Representative Dawkins.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, if you do a parenting plan right now under the existing law, you can deal with the child's residence without having to designate someone having primary physical custody and the other person being the loser and not having the primary physical custody. And in terms of child support, you do then have to look at whether or not one of the parents has the child for more than 45.1% of the time or less in terms of figuring out the child support. That's what the existing law is right now. If you were to, I need to know your question more. If we were to enact this law, then you're wondering how it affect parenting plans? Well, I don't think at all.
Great. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then we heard some testimony also a little earlier about child abuse and domestic abuse and all those kinds of situations. And Mr. Dawkins, maybe you could answer, would what we're trying to do here change anything that's in current law with regard to those kinds of situations?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, not the A5 amendment. That would not change any of that.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all the testimony, and we have a lot of people that have been working in this area, and I don't think there's a member of this committee that doesn't want parents to be involved in their child's life. I would guess that all of us want moms and dads to be involved with their children's life as long as it's a safe relationship. So I agree with, you know, I agreed with the people that talked about supporting this bill, that that's what we want. And then I agreed with the people that were speaking against it, because everyone's saying about the same thing, that what we want is in the best interest of the child. And so my question is, you know, how much time have we worked together on this? I know that Representative Dawkins and Senator Seeloff have spent lots and lots of hours on this when they were here. And I know that when I was here in the House, we spent many, many, many hours and many, many, hours of groups, not just in committee, but groups getting together to really find out how we can work this out, which is, I know, where the current law came from. And so I know that people feel like they've been working on these issues for a long time, and I know that change sometimes takes a long time, and sometimes it comes incrementally. And
And we all have situations of people that we know that have good or bad, you know, experiences with the court system. Believe me, I know many people who have unfortunately gone through divorce. Some of them have been able to work it out to their satisfaction. Unfortunately, some have not. And so we know that we are all tempted to legislate for those specific situations that we wish could be different. But we are legislating for an entire, you know, state of citizens. And so we need to pass laws that can really be flexible and applicable to a large number of people. So my question is, how much time have we spent trying to work this out? Because I really do think we have very similar interests in this, in among the opponents and the proponents. So have we spent time, you know, meeting in groups to see where do we need to change these laws? I mean, I know we spent a lot of time getting the original, this current law. Where have we spent time in now making those changes? So if you could just comment on a bit about the process, please.
Representative Dawkins.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGuire. I think that the amount of time that's been spent has been worthwhile, the first point, that indeed our system of how we treat our children in family court is much better than it was when I started practicing family law 30 years ago. And I think that it's a combination of society's changes, that we don't have a stay-at-home mom and we used to before. I think it's because studies that have been done of children of divorce have shown that whereas we used to theorize that the stability of having one home was the most important thing in children's outcomes after divorce, that the studies now indicate the stability of having two parents involved in your life is more important than just having one primary house. And I think that the courts have seen all of this and adjusted, and I think that the move to doing the early neutral evaluations to try to get families to deal with their solutions before they spend a lot of money litigating has been good. But none of that would probably be happening without all these different pieces working together, including the legislature. And I still think, like I said in my earlier testimony, that we can do better, that our current system still is not as good as it should be. I would do a bill, if I were here, that would say that you don't have to go to court to get married. Why do you have to go to court to get divorced? So I think there's a lot we can do.
Mr. Chair, may I add for Senator McGuire?
Yes, Ms. Olson.
As far as how much work has been done on this, it's been an enormous amount of work. I personally have been working on this, as I said earlier, for 13 years, a lot of times full-time at the huge sacrifice of my personal life and my professional life. The whole system in family court for 40, 50, 60-plus years gave one parent 17% time. Every other weekend, and it is about 17% time with 2 weeks in the summer. We waited then 40 plus years to get from 17% time to 25% time for one parent. What are we going to have to do? Wait another 40 years for equal time when the U.S. Supreme Court has made it explicitly clear in Troxell v. Granville and Stanley v. Illinois and Santosky versus Kramer, and it goes on and on. I'm not an attorney, but I can read very well case law that says fit, loving parents have a fundamental right to the care, custody, and control of their children. And we have made, over the last 13 years, every effort to talk with all the opponents of this, especially the usual suspects that show up in opposition, which is the divorce industry. In 2008, I was part of the Joint Physical Custody Study Group. That in 2008, the legislator says, oh, we need to study this more. We need more information. Are you sure we've talked about this enough? So they legislated a study group. You know, how much do we have to study it? As Dr. Linda Nielsen and many, many, many other researchers have found, joint physical custody and equal shared parenting is in the best interest of children. Thank you.
Senator McGuire.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate all the work that you've done. I know that we all work really hard on issues that we're really passionate about, and many of us work many, many years to get things to be the way they should be. And I hope that these changes can happen sooner.
I guess it's hard for me to imagine that when a court system sees this, that they aren't going to allow for the for this joint custody. I just don't know why we have to necessarily put it in law. It's very tragic to put it in law because the courts can do this on their own. They don't have to have it in law. And I am still concerned that we haven't, if we do have to put it in law, I mean, I haven't seen the indication where they're not doing it, you know, in large numbers. I mean, I understand people have tough situations, and I sympathize with that. I absolutely hate to see it, and I have friends who are in horrible divorce settlements. But I, when we legislate it and make it exactly what it needs to be for everyone and we don't give the courts the flexibility, I get nervous about that. And then I want us to reach some better agreement with everyone involved. And I know that this bill came up rather suddenly, so I'm not sure how much time we've all worked together, you know, that the sides have all worked together on this. I guess I could ask Senator Wolf how long she has. I mean, when I carry legislation that's controversial, I've spent months and months, sometimes years, you know, trying to work on it. But it may only be a couple, you know, it doesn't have to be years and years, but it should be some time that we spend trying to work this out because it's laws that we're passing. This is very serious business. So
Mr.
I'm not
Chair.
Opposed to doing something about it, but I'm just not sure this is that we should do that this way.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Wolf.
Senator McGuire, as far as how long I've been involved, 12 years ago I was divorced. And you say that judges can do this now. I never in a million years thought I would ever find myself in a divorce situation. And in my circumstance, when we went to court, I had never been in a courtroom before, had no idea. I was at the mercy of the lawyers and people telling me what the law said and this is how it was going to be. And before our turn came, the couple that was before us came to the judge with a plan of how they would have their children 50-50. And that was what they both agreed to, what they both wanted to do. And after they presented that, the judge reamed them, chastised them, thought it was ridiculous that they wanted to do this, and said, I don't want to see you back in my courtroom in 6 months from now because this doesn't work. And so they wanted to do something different, and personally, I think if two people come to the courtroom and say, this is what we want, we should have a judge saying, hey, that's great, awesome. Because when we say a judge can do that, my first experience with seeing divorce was apparently they don't want it done that way. And as far as working on the issue, I've only been a legislator for going on 2 years now, and it was one of the important issues that I wanted to bring here because that had a big impact in my life. And it has not only impacted me, but it's impacted several people in my life. And so I guess my personal opinion is, you know, we talk so much about the best interest of the children, and again, we were, whatever the court decided, the court went with the norm for us. And in my situation, I told my children, you can see your dad anytime you want to. And that's not the norm. And I'm thankful for my children's sake that I was able to separate my issues with my ex and their ability to be with their dad. Most cases are not like that. And from several of the families that I've heard from, it isn't that way. It isn't a willingness. I have somebody else that did go back and get 50-50 and at a great cost. And I think, like you said, we all agree both parents are best interest for the child unless there's a reason that that's not beneficial to the child. And this amendment protects those reasons still from happening. And I hate hearing all the argument over it being about money. And it always seems that the argument is, well, he's just going to take me back to court because he wants to not pay me as much. Well, I would say on the flip side, we could give that same assumption that she doesn't want to give up, or he or whoever has the physical custody doesn't want to go back to court because they don't want to lose money. So to me, that argument is moot because you could argue both sides of that when it comes to that. I think ultimately we need to figure out how to assist children
in being with both parents. In where I teach, I know a couple examples were given. We see statistic after statistic how children from fatherless homes are more likely to commit suicide. They're more likely to be depressed. They're more likely to use drugs. They're more likely to commit crimes. And I think, and again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't speak legal. To me, the overwhelming part of that is that in a lot of cases, the courts don't allow parents to even make that decision to have it be more equal.
Mr. Chair,
Sarah McGuire.
One more. I'll let other people ask questions now, but I appreciate all of those comments, Senator Wolf. I would just say that 12 years ago, I think the courts were different and that they are changing, and I still haven't seen the evidence where perhaps the opponents and the proponents have spent some time actually getting together and talking about this, because the stories that you've told are in the past, and I know we've heard some current ones, but I really want to see the people talk more about it together currently, and then we can see if we can reach some agreement. But I'm going to let my colleagues ask more questions.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make one more comment of concerns I've had people come to me with, where they say in their cases they will have judges say, well, this is the way the law is. If you don't like it, go see your legislator. And then they bring it to the legislators,
right,
and the legislators here go, ooh, family law. No, we don't want to touch it. It's a difficult subject, and it is a difficult subject. And some of these people are in the cycle of they want to see these changes happen, but the very people who can make these changes happen are either too afraid to make it happen or, don't want to make anybody mad at them, or, you're going to hear cases on both sides. And so there's this loop of people who feel that the legislators are their only chance to get things fixed, and then we don't want to touch it. And I think we need to have that conversation.
Sir Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess some of that last discussion goes to part of what I'm contemplating here, which is when the income shares recalibration of the family law statute was passed in 05 or 06. At that time, I think there was a broad consensus within the community of people involved and concerned about this issue. And it resulted in, it was a long time coming, yes, but it resulted in a bill that was, or law that was generally accepted across a broad range of the community. And as I understand, I'm not an expert in family law, don't practice in it at all, but from what I can gather, the delinking of parenting time with the money part of it, at least the substantial delinkage, the use of the broad categories, was beneficial. It seems to have reduced legal involvement and expense. It wouldn't have surprised me if Ms. Seaton testified that she makes more of her money litigating on motions in Wisconsin courts now than in Minnesota because of the difference between the laws. And I'm very, very concerned that adding another tier in there in Section 2 of this bill is going to result in just additional litigation, more motions, and whatever we like to say about each parent is always concerned about the best interests of the child. I think if we're all going to be honest, we have to acknowledge that money is a part of the battle, and how much is owed in child support, how much is unpaid in child support. And that's just human nature. That's a part of it. So I'm a little concerned. I'm a lot concerned that Section 2 actually would feed the divorce industry, as Ms. Olson referred to it, rather than the other way around. And with all due respect to those who had personally challenging experiences in the court system, I know from representing many clients over the years that whatever story they have told me, I'm going to get a different story from the other side of the case. And so I don't know any of the individuals that have testified. I don't know the details of their individual cases, but I suspect if we ask the other party to the case, we'd get a very, very different version of why parenting time is set the way it is set. That's just a generalization. I'm not speaking to any specific individuals. But the other thing I'm a little unclear on, and maybe Mr. Dittmerner could help me understand this, because he kind of mentioned the importance or the consequence of going from 25% to 35% on the presumptive parenting time, and it sounded like you were kind of getting to the point of saying, like, kind of getting near the edge of a cliff. There's going to be like a fall-off period. And I wasn't sure if that's what you meant, so I wonder if you could clarify that for me and help me understand how that might begin to crowd out some of the negotiations or mediations that would go on between parents.
Mr. Dittmer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, here's the deal with that particular problem. Imagine that somebody under this new law or under the old law was paying child support under of $1,000 per month's basic support obligation. Right now, if they have parenting time between 10 to 45%, there's a 12% parenting expense adjustment from that support obligation, meaning that their support obligation is $120 in that specific example less because they have parenting time between 10 to 45%. Under this new bill, with a parenting time presumption of 35% and two tiers in the middle, one between 10 to 30% and one 30 to 45%, you have a parenting expense adjustment for people with parenting time between 10 to 30% of 15% and a parenting expense adjustment of 35% for those people with parenting time between 30 to 45%. So basically, when you get a fifth overnight during a two-week period, that gets you 35% parenting time. You go from a $150 parenting expense adjustment, the basic support obligation is $1,000 per month, to a $350 parenting expense adjustment. So you have that huge cliff of what happens when the number of overnights changes from 4 to 5 per every 2 weeks.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
So I guess I'm beginning to see this a little bit better. I think if there's a, you're saying is that the change in Section 1 of the presumptive parenting time, you can't separate that out from the change in Section 2 of the bill with the tiers and the payment, the expense adjustments. In fact, they're very closely tied together, and it jumps you. That change going from 25 to 35% under the new scheme in Section 2 would jump you to a very big change in the expense obligations. Am I following that?
Mr. Dittmer. Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, you're absolutely correct.
Is there any other than that financial connection, is there any other thing that you're concerned about in the change in that bottom percentage from 25 to 35%?
Mr. Dittmer. Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, I'm also concerned that whenever you have a presumption of a certain amount of parenting time that's getting closer and closer to equal, it assumes that all situations are alike. And all situations aren't alike. There are different families with different issues. There are families that live a huge distance apart. There's even smaller distances within the Twin Cities metro area that once you have more and more overnights for each parent, children are not going to be able to get to extracurricular activities or to other events because you have so much time sharing between parents. And 20 miles within the Twin Cities metro area during rush hour, during end of school, can mean quite a lot.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Latz.
Mr. Dittmerner, are you saying that it really leaves less flexibility within sort of the middle range for the court to fashion something that works in those cases where the court ends up making the decision rather than there being an agreed-upon decision?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, that is correct because the 35% becomes the new standard, and that is the presumption. That's five overnights every 2 weeks. And when you have people that live a bit apart, you may not get along that well. Situations in which you may have a father that doesn't have any pre-existing relationship with their child prior to adjudication of parentage, if we're presuming that all those situations that that person should have 35%, or you have mothers who don't have custody of their children, who have some issues with regard to their parenting ability. And one of the things that I think the Senate didn't have the benefit of is that there was an attorney from St. Paul by the name of Linda Allen, who works for a law firm that actually specializes in working on behalf of dads in custody and parenting time cases. She was talking about the equal to parenting time presumption bill from the standpoint of her male clients who have sole custody and how they would be damaged and their children would be damaged by having presumptions, because they're a rigid type of thing that everybody gravitates to, and that would become the standard for parenting time orders. And so you can't have a one-size-fits-all. I mean, it's a lot easier to work within a 25% parenting time presumption than it is a 35% parenting time. As you increase and increase and increase this presumption, you're going to have more problems with rigidity.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
sir. I think Ms. Hugdahl wanted to add to the answer to my question.
Mr. Seeloff wanted to answer first.
Okay, well,
sounds like all the lawyers want to chime in.
Mr. Seeloff, would you like to make a comment?
I'll also ask if Ms. Hugdahl can respond to my question as well, Mr. Chairman.
The reason, Mr. Chairman, Senator, it was such a good question, so.
I can tell you used to serve in this body.
Mr. Seeloff, do you have a really good answer for a really good question?
I think Mr. Dittmer response to your question, while perhaps correct, didn't exhaust the subject. If under the income shares model, the reason we have that 10%, that big gap between 10% and 45%, because when the bill was passed, the opponents of the bill wanted to keep as much the same as possible. And so they set those percentages so that it would be as close to the old system as possible in terms of the monetary outcome. So the way when I said that the income share model worked so well, it was the decoupling of child support from custody. Now, that's the important thing, because we used to have a system where custody determined everything. It was whoever got custody won everything. By decoupling child support from custody, it didn't matter who had custody. It then devolved upon who had the parenting. So all of the incentives to get custody won. Now, the bill before it was amended had a presumption of joint custody. That's not in the bill anymore, but that would have no effect on child support whatsoever. Logically speaking, the CHERS model that we should have would have a continuous curve where child support would be set based on the amount of time that you spend, rather than have these breakpoints. So the argument, let's say, against the bill that this would create litigation, actually is a false argument, in the sense that all you're doing is you're changing the threshold, but the way the system is set up now, having those breakpoints is artificial. So there's nothing magic in the existing model that deserves preservation. So therefore, the argument I think that is being made with the committee is not entirely correct. Comment. Your very good question.
Sir Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Not to interrupt Senator Hoffman, but I Ms. Hugdahl was going to be given an opportunity to respond to
right.
my question as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank
Ms. Hugdahl.
You, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, briefly, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the rigidity issue and the 25 to 35%. 25%, a lot of the discussion when income shares was passed, because the 25% went into law at the same time. It was part of the same bill. It was looking at the best interest of the child interplaying with the presumption and not waiting a presumptive number over looking at the best interest. We wanted to keep the focused in best interest. So 25% as a minimum amount allows that interplay. The closer you get 35% minimum, you start moving toward equal custody. And one of the concerns that I think a lot of people have talked about over time with equal custody is that it looks at the number, and the number is the number. It takes the focus away from the courts and the parents on the best interest factors under the statute. That's the interplay between those two. And some of you may know, too, that in my prior life, I was involved in the income shares bill, not only with my role at Legal Aid, but I was actually the technical assistance to the Senate when I was with the Department of Human Services. And as a lot of those discussions happened, there was a discussion about, and I talked about my testimony, should there be kind of these mini bumps of adjustment brackets or one scope, the 12% reaching a long way? And the decision was made of the 12% very deliberately. It was a lot of discussion. There's a lot of people involved in those meetings, all talked about, negotiated over time. So I think the fact that somehow people weren't aware that there were these expense adjustments, we're not talking about the cost of raising children. That's what the chart is about. This is the parenting expense adjustment. All this bill does is change the expense adjustment. That's the reduction piece we're talking about. That piece was a totally different discussion.
Well, Ms. Hugdell, we seem to have reduced the argument down to a graph on paper with percentages. And yet we heard the argument that society has changed since the days of these numbers being presented. Much of the family structure was a primarily a single breadwinner. Oftentimes, and I think the percentages on court awarding the children in custody to a mother was highly significant. And society has changed, but I'm not quite so sure if I'm convinced that this little graph with the percentages has changed to reflect a societal difference. And as we look at and consider this nudge of the percentages, I know that the attorneys in the room are saying, you know, they're kind of taking a gasp and saying, how can this is major change. But yet, anyone who's been around the United States for the past 40 years certainly knows there's been a dramatic change in the expectation of women's salaries, and women in general since the feminist days have been recognized in some rather extraordinary manners. Now, I'm going to get lots of letters now because feminists will say that, no, you got it all wrong and you're blind to all the other things. But having said that, what's your perception of how society has changed, and why would we not change these numbers?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, I assume we're talking about, I don't have a copy, unfortunately, of the amendment in front of me, that you're talking about the chart that's the parenting expense adjustment.
On 2.6 through 11.
Yes. That adjustment piece, again, that's talking about the extra expenses that an obligor incurs in parenting time. And so those were passed in 2005, 2006. So those were changed just within the last, you know, really almost 5 years now. So these expenses, and actually, to be honest with you, Mr. Chair, one of the concerns I have about the bill is we haven't really heard a lot of explanation of where these numbers have come from to support making changes to a specific number. Why 35% of a deduction is kind of a magic number that sets things, or from 12 to 15. But that being said, I think within the last 5 or 6 years, if there are changes in the costs of raising children, if there are economic factors that relate to that, that should be an update of the actual grid that is the amount of the cost of raising a child that's split proportionally between the parents. What appears before you in lines 2.6 through 2.11 is the step two, which is the adjustment, the reduction given to a non-residential parent to reflect their extra expenses of parenting time, and that's an allowed holdback to them. So I hope that answers the question on kind of what the parenting expense adjustment does.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, I'm going to move on to you.
I'm just waiting to see, Mr. Chair, if Senator Latz has any more questions.
I do, Mr. Chair, but I will not ask him no.
Just don't give him a chance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to a point that Senator McGuire made a little bit ago about how long this bill's been worked on, and I'm a co-author on the bill, so I want to say, and I've only been here as long as Senator Wolf, and her and I have been working on this bill together for since we've been here, and I also went last year to the House hearing, and we didn't hear the testimony here tonight that I actually got to hear last year. They had a very long hearing in the House last year. We had a lot of the children come and testify, and we had a lot of testimony that talked about what happens to children when their fathers aren't present, and Senator Wolf touched on some of that, but I think that it was so compelling that we are moving away from what the intent of this bill is, and this is getting dads back in touch with their kids, and we keep talking about money here. I heard a lot of testimony from fathers last year also that money wasn't the object. They were spending $100,000, $200,000, and $300,000 just to get time with their kids. We didn't get to hear that testimony here tonight, but I heard it last year. And I'd be willing to bet that some of the fathers in the audience were here last year and heard the same thing. But I want to get back to what happens to kids. And maybe one of the testifiers that was up here before that maybe could go into a little bit more depth. What happens to children when their dads aren't involved? I mean, the statistics, I think, are pretty remarkable. Schonecker, was that who started? I don't remember exactly which testifier that was, but this is a bill that I worked on for 2 years. I sat with the opponents of the bill. I was with Ms. Olson. I was with Mr. Ulrich. And this isn't something that anybody entered lightly. And I have people in my district. I know somebody that I used to work with that is would not be the same political party I am from, but I happen to know that he spent over $100,000 just trying to be with his children. And so I think if we could, the money issue they're making a big deal of, but I want to know what happens to children when their fathers aren't there. And in my world, when I got involved in this bill, it was so that fathers would have an influence over their children's life and hopefully send them out into the world ready for what the world would be to give them. So if you could maybe get into that a little bit better.
Mr. Schonecker?
I have a sheet that lists all the things and the percentages that happen, and another sheet that I didn't, I guess I do have it here, that tells the sources of that those statistics. 63% of youth suicides are from, these are from fatherless homes. 71% of pregnant teenagers. 70% of juveniles in state-operated institutions come from fatherless homes. 85% of children that exhibit behavioral disorders. 80% of rapists motivated with displaced anger. 71% of high school dropouts, 75% of all adolescent parents in chemical abuse centers, 85% of all youth locked in prisons, 90% of all homeless and runaway children. Angry mothers sabotage a father's efforts to visit their children. Few children are satisfied with the amount of contact they have with their fathers. The mother was the greatest obstacle to having more frequent contact with the children. 37.9% of all fathers have no access to visitation rights. 40% of mothers reported that they had interfered with their non-custodial father's visitation on at least one occasion to punish the ex-spouse. 50% of mothers see no value in the father's continued contact with the children. 70% of fathers felt that they had too little time with their children. 77% of non-custodial fathers are not able to visit their children as ordered by the court as a result of visitation interference by the mother. 89% of mothers don't value their husband's input when it comes to handling problems with their kids. Non-compliance with court order visitation is 300% more common than non-compliance with court-ordered child support and impacts the children of divorce even more. I have copies of this if you'd like them. And I have the sources as well.
Mr. Chair, what are your sources?
Yeah. Pardon me? Mr. Schonecker, what were your sources from that?
They're in the same order I read them, but the first one was the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Bureau of Census. The second one was the Department of Health and Human Services. The third one was the U.S. Department of Justice Special Report. Fourth one, the Center of Disease Control. Fifth one, Criminal Justice and Behavior, volume 14, page 4, et cetera. Sixth, National Principals Association, report on high schools. Rainbows for God's Children for number 7, Fulton County, Georgia, jail population, Texas Department of Corrections. the U.S. DHHS, Bureau of Census, and on like that. I have copies of that, too, that correspond.
Mr. Schoenecker, could you do us a favor? Could you provide us a complete list of that? Just send it to my office.
Absolutely.
I'll get it dispersed to all the members.
Absolutely.
I think that's Mr. a valuable list. Senator Goodwin is next.
Senator okay. Goodwin. Thank you. And I just want to say to our testifier that it sounds like those were not statistics, though, for Minnesota, and not all states have the same divorce laws or whatever. So that's just a side comment.
I think, Senator Goodwin, that Mr. Schoenecker was providing national percentages.
Correct. I'm just saying that may not be applicable to Minnesota in the same percentage points because we do have a number of things. My first question, maybe several of mine are for Senator Wolf. In the last 3 years, some of you are new, Senator Goffman and Hoffman and Senator Wolf and plenty others on this committee and others, but in the last few years, whether Republicans or Democrats had the House or Senate, members had really tried to make an effort to get divisive bills away from the legislature and into the hands of the people that opposed them and supported them. And I heard many legislators say, you guys go work this out, and then you come back to us and tell us what you want changed. And obviously that's what happened with this divorce law before, and it worked. And divisive legislation over my past 27 years or so around here has never worked because the other side comes back then again and wants something different, and then the other side comes back. So my first question for you, Senator Wolf, is how many meetings have you had with both sides of the issue at the same time together?
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, first of all, I think there would be a lot of argument when you say that it worked. I think there are a lot of families that would say it was a move in the right direction, but I wouldn't say that it worked. And as far as being with both sides, I guess my comment would be, like I said, I don't speak lawyer. And to sit in a room and have lawyers argue this out is, you know, they can talk circles around me as far as being lawyers go. I can only go by what I've seen, what I've witnessed, what I see in the schools with the kids that I teach. My personal beliefs on parenting, and I would actually, you know, throw a rhetorical question out there because I hear a lot of this centering around the money, and I guess I would, you know, throw a question out there. If I had brought forth this amendment and said that, you know, let's make it 45% and not 45.1, let's not do anything with the money, then does that change people's opinion? Because all of this has been centered about the courts arguing over, again, the child support. And the people who come to me argue they want more time with their children, and I'm going to take them for face value. So if that meant we just change the amount of time, bump it up to 40-45%, and we don't touch the money, then does that become something that everybody supports?
Well, Mr. Chair, I venture to say that you would have found that out if you would have gotten the groups together to try to come to some kind of a compromise. But beyond that, I'm interested in the testifiers that have said that it will create more court cases over the amount of child care support and whether or not people will keep going back to try to get it changed. I think the losing party in that battle will be the person that has more custody because they then have to go get an attorney and try to go get, if the father or the mother suddenly says, I don't want this 35% or whatever of the time with this child, then the other party has to go back to court and try to get the money back out of the party that's not spending the time with the child. And it can be mothers just as well as fathers. I have nothing against fathers raising their children. So I want to put that out there. Another question I want to ask you is because we keep talking about the best interest of the child, and I am also a child of adult child of a divorce, and I'll tell you what the best interest of the child is to everybody I've known that are adult children of divorces. The best interest of the child is when the parents stop the hostility between themselves and think about those children instead of the hate or the dislike or the hostility or the negativity or talking to their children about the other parent, because those kids are half of both of those parents, the father and the mother. And whether it's the father that talks gets the mother talks gets the father, or both. The most destructive thing in a divorce is not the divorce itself. It's what those parents do with that divorce and what they do to those children by continuing their conflict and negativity. And you test that on a scale, on a research project, and you see what the kids in a divorce say about that, because that ruins their self-esteem. That they know they're part of each parent. That ruins their self-esteem. It ruins their school grades. It ruins everything for them, because they also feel that they must be a bad person if their other parent is a bad person. So I don't condone that kind of activity for either parent. And I think this kind of an argument encourages that, quite frankly. And if it encourages that, and I think that if these folks can get together and come up with something they can agree on, we'd all be better off, and certainly the children would be better off. So I don't have a lot of sympathy one side or the other for the main custodial parent or the parent that's trying to get more custody. I think that their issue should be to take care of those kids and make darn sure that they're not creating a lot of hostility for those children, because that's what's going to damage them the most. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, how is your provisions here, how do they include the best interest of the child? How do you address that if we go to the presumption of more shared custody? How are you addressing the best interest of the child in all cases? Because this is presumed, so they can get 35% practically no matter what their situation is or how they...
Senator Wolf?
Mr. Chair, I don't know where to start with all of that. I wanted to answer several things in there. But I've had a request to go ahead and answer that one.
Could you identify yourself?
Mr. Chair, I'm Patty Murto. I teach Kids First. I have for 20 years. And most of that class is how not to destroy your children as you go through this process. And the expediter part of me deals with these parents who absolutely cannot do anything right. And they can't switch a weekend if their lives depended upon it. Those children are messed up from the get-go, and right. They're not, no matter how hard I try to make things work for those children are going to be messed up. And just Senator Goodwin, just in how you talked about that, the anger and the hurt in your voice is still there. And the hurt that you suffered when your parents fought is still there.
Right.
And I work very hard and have, until I was forced into a medical retirement just shortly ago, worked with parents not to have that happen. The presumption of joint physical custody isn't going to change parents who fight. But the most abused, as the custody evaluator, the most abused best interest of the 13 factors is the parent's ability to get along. And the parent who wants custody, which is usually the mom, will immediately not get a good deal off, just so there is no chance for there to be joint physical custody. And so hardly ever, just because of that one factor out of all the 13 factors, will destroy any father's chance to get joint physical custody.
Senator Thompson,
Mr. Chair, to your point about it being an effect on me, it was, but it was also an effect on the children that I worked with in Children's Mental Health at Hennepin County for 4 years. And those children were a mess when they'd come through a messy divorce. And there were several bad ramifications of that on their mental health.
Absolutely.
And suicides are the second biggest cause of death and for young people 10 to 24 in Minnesota, where it's third in other states or in average states in the nation. So it's a big deal. And it can be either parent. And I know what you say, you know, well, maybe it's the mother that doesn't let the father see them. It absolutely can be.
So one last thing. Mothers get custody most of the time.
One last thing I want to tell you is that this is, and I'm sure you probably found this, this is this kind of a legal battle ongoing that hurts the children is sometimes one way of the parents staying connected to each other. It's this kind of love-hate thing. And I had a divorce attorney tell me about how he had a couple that he was trying to get to finalize the divorce, but they kept fighting over one vase. One vase that they got on a trip to the Orient or something, and that was the last holdout thing that they had that they couldn't agree on. So the divorce came, and he said, "I was collecting fees the whole time. You know, I was doing fine, but I just got sick of it. So I found out where it was made. I went out to California. I bought the vase for $20, and I brought it back. And I said, 'Here, now you both have one. Get it over with.'" And his point was that they just wanted to stay connected, and that was their way of staying connected, whether it's positive or negative. But it's very negative on the children.
Well, Senator Thompson, on this point.
I have a kind of a general point, so if there was someone in line ahead of me on the other issue.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And after that, I'm kind of don't know where to start. I mean, I think we all have stories, and we've all had people in our office. And, you know, I've only been elected here for 10 years, but I started hanging around here in 1992 over some issues that were very near and dear to my heart, and they were family issues. And I have 25 years of youth ministry, so I get to see the results of things here. And I think, Senator Wolf, I think you did a good job to try to explain to us that you're trying to get to certain points. And that's one thing I have found from hanging out here way too many years is sometimes the groups tend to fight instead of trying to come together and figure out how do we move towards what your goal is here. And I think you did say some good things, because part of what you're looking at here when you couple that support with that time, I don't think from the people that came to my office are looking for that. They're looking for time with the kids. And from some of the and there's a Senator Goodwin, there's a ton of bills out there that number of us have authored, Senator Hall, I know for sure. I've worked on some where we know a lot of the research on the hostility issues, and if we put people through some coursework, that can take care of that. But I have a problem with what some of the testifiers are coming here, because it seems like you're talking about the exceptions rather than the rules, the opponents. And I always hear this best interest of the child. And to me, it seems like the parents are always decoupled from that decision, that the courts or somebody else is assigned to figure out what the best interest of the child, and that seems to be part of the problem. So can somebody kind of help bring that together? Because based on the testimony, I'm assuming that every situation is hostile. That's one of the notes I wrote here. And the best interest thing, it seems like we were talking about the courts and some quasi-expert figuring out the best interest rather than the parents being able to share what is the best interest of the child in these situations. So can somebody help bring that all together? Because it seems like it way got far afield as to how it relates to the bill.
I can speak to the best interest of the children. There are several factors, and parents can fight about them. They can fight about how many which parent took them to more medical appointments. They can fight about which one did more, went to more of the activities. They can, as earlier said, which one got along better. They can fight about who loves the children more, which parent the child is more associated with. And to Senator Hoffman's point, I think it was Senator Hoffman or Senator McGuire, when she said, why do we need legislatures, you know, to legislate this? And if you understand or research fundamental rights and you realize that each parent has a fundamental right and it's not 50-50, it's 100%, 100%. And when we're talking about somebody getting a presumption of 25% parenting time, what then that means the other parent gets 75%, and which parent are we talking about? So we the purpose of this legislation and why it would be invaluable if it could be simplified, because I think over the years it's overcomplicated. We're trying to take a family, and we're talking about national statistics and local statistics and legislative family, and there are 5.7 million domestic orders a year in the country. Each family has their own little domestic order, and that's their own little order that's going to govern their family. And if we just simplify it, which I'd love everybody to get together and do that, to say that all parents have a fundamental right to the care, custody, and control of their family. And the courts are catching up to Troxell, which is in 2000. Just in the past 2 weeks, our Supreme Court Chief Justice, Lori Gilday, confirmed, and it's 2012, Troxell and this fundamental right. So the legislators, the lawmakers, really don't have to legislate a fundamental right, but they have to reinforce it. And it hasn't been reinforced in the current laws. It's just been trying to be elaborated on. I researched back in the early 1900s, and do you know that we didn't talk about joint custody? We didn't talk about temporary custody. We didn't talk about physical custody. We didn't talk about sole custody. We just talked about custody. A parent had custody. One had it during the week, and one had it during the weekend. That's how simple it was. And fathers just weren't getting enough time. So we've really tried to legislate it too much, and I really do believe that if we could simplify it by everybody getting together, we will eliminate court for families. If every parent that's separating, and the realm of family is not something that courts are supposed to get involved in at all. The United States Supreme Court has said that, but they can really get involved in it when you're breaking up, can they? So let's give parents who are breaking up their fundamental rights back. And I trust parents. I've represented both sides of parents for 25 years, and I really do believe that if we give them those rights, they're not going to abuse them. We don't have to have courts second-guessing them. They're not going to say, I want more time just for the money, or I want more money, so I want more time, or whatever way the money will not be involved. Parents will go in and they'll acknowledge and they'll submit to the other parent and they'll each get along and they won't need lawyers, so I'll be out of a job. They will be able to do this themselves. No doubt about it in my mind. If we could just legislate what the fundamental rights that parents already have. They are fighting for their rights right now in court. Fathers, mothers, and it doesn't matter how many. We can say we're not in an adversary process, but when you file a divorce petition, and any one of you are married, you know, you're in bed one day with somebody and you're in court the next. Any one of you who are married, there's no such thing as a friendly lawsuit. In family court, you're actually, this is just the culture. We sue the other parent. We sue your husband. We sue your wife, the person that you're most intimate with, the person that you knows all of your secrets. And when you said something about people going with their own agreements, I thought you were going to say, 10 years ago, somebody was up there and their agreement actually got accepted, because that's still happening today. Courts are second-guessing what parents want to do. So I am very firmly in support of the presumption of joint physical custody to add to the presumption of joint legal custody, because we don't have joint legal fights anymore since the 80s.
Okay, folks, we've got we're coming almost to the end of the hour. I've got four senators left, and I think since it's a good discussion, I'm going to go with those four senators, but we're cutting it off there. So, Senator Jungbauer.
Real quick follow-up on that is, so from a legal standpoint, is there a way to separate the time of custody and so parents can have that time away from the money, so that's a separate argument because I think the money becomes more hostile than the parenting time. And I think Senator Wolf was kind of leading us towards that, to at least talk about that. Am I asked when you said if we could separate that out, would that make a difference? Senator Wolf?
Mr. Chair, I was asking it more rhetorical. I wasn't asking it so it would become an additional difficult decision to be made tonight. But I ask it because the arguments I hear are all centered around time, not around money. So I was just wondering if I put that out there, that we would have increased the time to 41 and not exceeded the 41 or 45.1, if there would still be this arguing going on, or if everybody just say, yep, more time, let's not worry about the money.
People that come to my office, Senator Wolf, and members, they talk about time with the kids. They don't talk about the money issue together, so I didn't know if we could legally separate that and if that would help
anything. Representative
Dawkins,
can you help?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungauer, in my private practice of law representing parents in divorce cases, oftentimes I'll say to the father, I'll say, look, take the money off the table by just saying, even if I get 46% of the parenting time, I'm still going to pay child support as if I had 44%. And you just take it right off the table, and then you got a lot better chance of working out an agreement for the best interest of the children on the time. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it would be if instead of trying to have it be based on time, it would be based on what's the historic spending this family has done on this child or these children? What is their hopes for their future spending? What are their abilities to pay? Which one? And if you went through it like that, and set up a joint checking account, and you each put the money in based on your ability to pay and on your combined desires. It's sort of like a parenting plan for the money. You could try and do those kinds of things, but right now you need the child support guidelines for those cases where you can't get those kind of agreements that I talked about.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask our senators to limit their questions now to one question. So, Senator McGuire.
Oh, man, Mr. Chair, that's a really hard one.
And I just didn't pick you out, Senator McGuire.
No, I know. I appreciate that you've called on me again, Mr. Chair, because I actually do have a list of questions, because this is legislation that is important, and we really should spend some time really thinking about it, and I'm sorry to hear that there weren't more meetings, because when you do legislation like this, you don't have to be a lawyer, though, to bring people together to talk about what common ground we might find in this. And you don't always find a common ground that everybody agrees with. I get that. But there's some common ground that you might be able to find. But I know that Ms. Hugdahl and Ms. Cunningham at the table wanted to comment, and so I'm just going to cede my time to them to comment on some of the questions that have been asked already. And so if they could each comment on things that have been said, and I will delay. I will not ask my specific questions.
So
maybe Ms. Cunningham could start, and then Ms. Hugdahl could
well,
comment.
Well, hold
she
on now,
to
Senator
on
McGuire.
Sure.
Senator
I could ask him a direct question. But okay.
Why don't you ask a direct question? Because if I proceeded in that regard, we could have people give quite a long testimony covering all the previous questions of this hour. So.
Exactly.
Let's limit it down to a question.
Okay. Well, Ms. Cunningham had wanted to respond to one of the previous comments that was made, and I think one of my questions had been about, are there any studies, like what has been shown? And so I know we heard about a study, but I don't know where that study came from. And we all know that we can find studies that say a lot of things that, you know, we want them to say. So we really do need to know where these studies are coming from. But if people know the numbers of families, and perhaps we need someone from the court system here to say where, you know, what percentage of people have had, you know, court, you know, have had parenting agreements set by the courts that have been, you know, really unfair to them. But Ms. Cunningham, I know.
You have a question in there?
Yeah. Ms. Cunningham, do you have any response to that question?
Well, I appreciate it to speak to the question, but I approached the table because this has turned into additional testimony for the bill. And those who are not for the bill are not being given the opportunity to address some of the issues. This discussion now has turned into what I have avoided stating. This is a dad's rights thing. This is the dad's rights organizations who have come forward, who have testified, and who have done that. Moms, custodial parents, don't know about this bill. I would request that the committee at least get a sense and a study of the courts as they are now, not 12 years ago, not with the pains that are going on right now in people's lives. My experience in courts is vastly different. There's many people that I speak to that have a vastly different experience than what these dads' organizations feel. That Ms. Olson is self-reporting for her side on the results and the consequences of what's going on in courts right now, I really protest. If the committee is going to take into account that kind of a report and take that kind of validity, I think they need to look at it. I think the effect on children and divorce in Minnesota needs to be looked at, not national. We need dads. We need male figures in our children's lives. But this mandating 35%, and what they're presuming is that we're dealing with people who are capable and effective, parenting. We're not protecting children from those situations where those parents aren't in existence. We need to protect the children when the effective parenting isn't there, the cookie cutter doesn't work. I'm really disappointed, excuse me, Mr. Dawkins, in the House, the mandatory parenting plan process is separate from this issue. I wish it was here. I fully support, if you have mandatory parenting plans, mandatory mediation process to bring parents together to actually work together and put the percentage at 25%. It's not 25% for a mom and then the 75 or for a dad and 75% for the parent, for the dad, for the mom, excuse me. This rattles me. It's 25 to each parent, and then you move forward. You can do that with mandatory parenting plans. You can do that with parents taking that ownership. A study needs to be done on what's going on right now in the courts if you want to use that as a basis for a decision. So I apologize for the time.
So, Mr. Chair, could I just finish my comment? I know I can't ask another question, but.
Senator McGuire, no. No.
I just think we need more time on this bill.
And Ms. Cunningham, I've looked at the agenda of those speaking. There's no mad dad people even on the list that spoke here today. Well, we have an open discussion, and people can talk about whatever they darn well want to. And I think we've given everyone that opportunity. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. I don't have a question. Just a couple of brief comments. First, there seems to have been a theme that Senator Wolf has either not done her homework or failed to meet with the opposition or both. I have talked with her at some length about this. I've had discussions with other senators, and in fact, I would argue that if you look at the original bill, she has come far more than halfway. In fact, I had a discussion, I can't remember if it was her with her or with someone else, that I don't think that this accomplishes nearly what her side of this argument had hoped to accomplish. So this notion that there has been no conversation, no compromise, no thoughtfulness in this, I think is a completely unfair assertion. I think that looking at this somewhat objectively, because I'll be honest with you, I've had conversations with the House author. I've had conversations with Senator Wolf. I was kind of on the fence on the other proposal, and I feel that she has come an awful long way. Frankly, if I were one of the opponents to this bill, I would feel like I'd gotten a pretty substantial win out of this thing. So this notion that she has ramrodded this through without taking into consideration the other side, I think is patently unfair. As to the merits, the structure has remained pretty much the same. We've just changed this percentage to 35%. A lot has been made of the movement from or the additional bracket on the money. I appreciate Mr. Ditburner, who I thought did a nice job of helping me understand that. But, you know, I heard the adjustment of $350 a month brought up. My public school math tells me that's about $4,200 a year. I think it would be a silly father who would spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on lawyer's fees in an attempt to save himself $350 a month. I would suggest that what would apply there is there are three kinds of people, those who are good at math and those who aren't. And so as I look at this, I don't find particular financial incentive to move forward with this thing. And I look and say, now we're just going to fight a little over a little bit lower percentage of the custody time. And so I will vote for this. I think it makes sense. And I would say that this bill, the author of this bill, has come more than halfway to what the opposition would like to see.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Senator Harrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. my question comes really, it speaks most to the issue of the rebuttable presumption. Presumption, as I understand it, and I share Senator Wolf's non-legal background here, speaks to something that you can take for granted as being true. And I think part of what we're trying to say here, or what I'm hearing here, is that there are two sides who have two different presumptions. One side says the presumption is that that this is just about parenting time, and this is just about wanting to have quality time with the family, just about wanting to have time with your kids. That's a presumption. It's a presumption that my 35 years as a cop doesn't set very well with, because I've seen kids used in divorce. I've seen kids used in horrific ways to punish the other parent. I've seen kids used to get even. I've seen, you know, just outrageous activities where the kids were the pawn, and they were the club to bludgeon the other person. And I've seen it on both sides, frankly. This is not just about dads. It's about moms and dads. So I don't share that presumption that that this is absolutely just about shared parenting time. In the back of my cop mind lingers the belief that there are people out there, to follow your lead, that there are at least two kinds of people. There are people who really do want to be good dads and good parents, and there are other people here who just want to punish the other person, and they'll spend whatever it takes, do whatever it takes, break any law to be able to do that. I have some concerns about the shared parenting time, even as we move the percentage up a little bit, because having worked with domestic violence victims, I know that they're very ill-prepared when they come to court. I hope that was not the case for any of the people that came in and testified tonight, that the women were in that situation. But I know they oftentimes come to court ill-prepared to testify on their own behalf. That they are beaten and badgered and so bullied that they'll take anything just to make the scariness stop. And so their ability to argue for their side of this is oftentimes compromised. And so I am concerned about the presumption that they come to the bar of justice as well prepared as they could be. And so that is a concern of mine. I am concerned about how you would rebut the presumption. It says it's a rebuttable presumption. As a non-lawyer, one of the questions that comes to me is, well, how do I rebut that? If I'm the battered spouse and I'm afraid to even see him in court, how do I come in and rebut that this should be 35%? That is a challenge for me as to how I expect that victim, that person who has lived in fear for that long, to be able to come in and make that rebuttable, come in and make that rebuttal. So that is also a concern of mine. Last concern is, and it shouldn't be about the money, but it oftentimes is. I won't say it usually is, but it oftentimes is. A lot of the women whose houses we went to on domestics were women that lived in poverty. Your math and mine comes up about the same. It's about $4,000. If you're living on $20,000, that $4,000 is 25% of what you're living on. And what I used to tell guys when they say, "Well, I'm getting divorced, and you know, I gotta pay this child support," and I'd go, "How much money did you spend on your kids when you were married?" They'd go, 100%. How much are you spending now? 25%. Or 45%, or whatever the number was. And the reality is that woman, oftentimes, that is all the money she may have. And when we take $4,000 out of that pot, it kicks her into not just not living the life of Riley. It kicks her into poverty. It kicks her into a place where she can't take care of the kids, or she can't pay for daycare, or she can't go to school, or she can't pay for meds. Or there are a lot of things that $4,000 in the life of a woman who lives on the edge of just making it, and that's a lot of the people I know out there that are in domestic situations. That $4,000 is the difference between, you know, the wolf being at the door. And so I have concerns about the reduction in the money. I have concerns about the rebuttable presumption. I have concerns about what is the presumption that we're working off of here. I'd like to think that we are all on the same page, and I'd like to think that everybody that wants this really does want it for all the right reasons. 35 years as a cop makes me cautiously suspicious and maybe a little cynical about that. So I have some concerns still with this bill. I do have one really tiny question, which should take no long time at all.
That's what we were waiting for.
I know. But you were waiting so patiently, and I appreciated the chance since I got here late, I appreciated the chance.
Is
35%, is 25% on the national scale high or low, or where does it fit within the scale of parenting time? My understanding was that it's high, but I'm not really sure whether it's high or low. And I don't really know who to ask that question. Ms. Hugdahl looked like she flinched, so I'm going to ask her, I guess. Yeah.
Ms. Hugdahl?
Mr. Chair, Senator Harrington, I need to stop flinching. But I don't know the total answer to that. The one thing I can tell you is that a lot of the income shares law was based out of Oregon. And I can tell you, Oregon used to have tiers. They have eliminated those from when I looked at the statute quickly the other day. And they have a 25% presumption. Now, whether that's common, my understanding from the work the Courts Task Force did a few years ago was that, I mean, although this isn't an equal time bill we're talking about now, this is just making an adjustment to the parenting expense cost. But states are kind of, there's a variety of where states are at. I don't think there's any state that does 45.1.
So, Ms. Hugdahl, do you know an average or not?
I don't accurately.
All right, thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen, final question.
The only question, actually, that I've had an opportunity to ask. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You've been a good senator.
I've been a good senator. I will have to say the testimony tonight has been somewhat, it's good. It's been a little disturbing to me in that it always seems to be, do we consider what the kids think of dad? If I'm the mother, I'm going to say both ways because I don't want to get the letters that Senator Limmer is going to be getting. Both ways. One of the parents says and thinks that the other spouse is not a very good parent. Really is kind of unfair when the child should be able to make that decision. Now, I'm not talking about abuse. I'm not talking about the stuff that Senator Harrington and I have waded into for 35 years wearing a badge. I'm talking about this obvious hatred when there's a divorce between the adults, and no question about the children are the ones that lose. Quite frankly, I would entertain a bill to leave the children in the house and the parents come and go.
Yeah.
Would you co-author that form with me? I mean, and I say that very, very honestly, because I have witnessed that in my own family, where it's about 50-50, 50%. The dad's a good guy, the mom's a good guy. I'm not even going to tell you who the parent is here, whether it's my daughter or my son. Doesn't matter. But the kids have to travel back and forth, and it's very troublesome to me. Very troublesome to me. I'm looking at, and I'm going to certainly tell you that I'm not a legal mind. I'm not an attorney, but I'm looking at former Minnesota Chief Justice Sandy Keith's just short little statement here. It says, "I think the whole concept of shared parenting makes a lot of good sense and ought to be given consideration." So my question to Senator Wolf is, why are we going only down to 35 and why aren't we doing 45%? In fact, I might even consider an amendment to go higher than the 35. Could I have her answer that question? I don't know what the fiscal ramifications are. I know there's some of that, but why not 50%? Maybe that's not a fair question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's definitely a fair question. And like I said, I'd love any movement towards equal shared parenting. And I just want to comment on the one comment you made about the House, that scenario I gave in the beginning, that was exactly the scenario that those parents gave. They would keep the house, the children would stay in the house, they would each get an apartment, and they would move back and forth into the house, and the children would stay put. That was the exact scenario that they gave, that the judge did not like. This is a topic that's very complex. Like I said, for me, I would like to see, for the benefit of the children, having the children spend as much time possible with both parents, with the exceptions of when there's obvious reasons why they shouldn't. I leave the legals to deal with the money part of it. As far as why it's this bill, because I think it had a lot to do with even the comments that were made about how much time it takes to discuss these kinds of issues. And my guess is in the bill in the original form, we probably would need a lot more time to go through to fully vet it, and I would love to have that opportunity someday down the road. As Senator Thompson said, this was an effort to bring something that has bipartisan support, has bipartisan authors on the bill, and something that even for those who were squeamish about going to the 45.1%, who aren't quite ready to make that leap yet, they're ready to make a baby step. And so I guess that's why it got to where it's at. I'm perfectly happy with making the giant leap, and I dig my heels in to do that, but I think in the best interest of what people's, the majority's comfort level is, this makes it easy for more to swallow. There are plenty who I think would have swallowed the full bill, but this is definitely moving us in the right direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman moves Senate File 1402. Is Senator Marty, we're...
Mr. Chair, I have had my hand up for a while. And I was not
breaking up my rule.
Mr. Chair, I was not planning to speak much on this and don't intend to speak long, but a couple of comments. One, first of all, when Ms. Hugdahl and former Senator Neville worked for about 4 or 5 years on the previous law, I'm not sure why Senator Neville would want to be a judge after going through all that. But I frankly admire the people who do go into that field, but I wouldn't want to because they're very – you need a lot of wisdom in that, and they're very troubling cases. And everyone who comes in here feels – I mean, any of the divorced parents on either side always feel – not always, but the ones who come here are always ones who feel they got – a bad deal, and in many cases they may have. And we're not trying to write the law for one of them. We're trying to write the laws that work for everyone. And so when Senator Thompson says, well, you know, you've compromised a lot, you've compromised so much the opponent should feel good, I'm not interested in compromise or whatever. I'm interested in trying to find out how we get the right numbers and the right way of doing it. And I do have a lot of concern that this extra tier in here is going to make people fighting over the money. You say, why would somebody spend $40,000 to save $3,000 or $4,000? I think Senator Harrington explained it very well, because a whole lot of people in this are fighting over punishing the other parent. And if you can take $4,000 away from somebody else, if it costs you $50,000 to do it, sometimes people do that. And that's why I guess the biggest concern I have about this is maybe this is a perfect bill. It doesn't, I'm hearing a lot of concerns from some of the lawyers who are dealing with both sides on this. And I guess I think that this does need more work. I think this isn't something that we hear from, well, if we had 2 more hours of testimony from both sides, I'm not sure that would make it better. I just think saying, well, she started with a bill that went much further than this and she's cut way back, and therefore this is a good compromise, I'm not sure that we're getting there. I very much see parents who fight in nasty ways, and I'd love to see much more of the use of the parenting plans. I think that's a great idea, a great approach. But Senator Wolf, I understand why you're coming forward with this. I'm just not sure that we couldn't do a better job of sitting down with the two sides together. And I'm sure the people who sat down in those several years of trying before didn't have a lot of pleasant meetings. I understand that. And you said you don't think the result was a good result. Well, I think at the time, having observed the whole thing, both sides felt it was better than what they had before. And I think that was, in a sense, a victory. But I'm just, I don't think you or anyone involved in this has ill intent in any of it. I'm just not sure this is there yet. And I guess I'd love to have you go back and work with both sides and try and get the Bar Association, the matrimonial lawyers, to make sure we work out the best. And I'm not sure you're going to get there tonight or this year, but I'd love to see that.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator,
Mr. Chairman,
Hoffman.
I have a motion to make.
Do you have a motion?
Yeah. For the reasons Senator Marty just stated, I move that we lay this matter on the table.
A motion has been made to table. That is not debatable. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. Oh, of the motion. 2, 5. And those in favor or opposed to the motion, raise your hand. Count 7, 8. Motion fails 5-8. Senator Hoffman renews her motion that Senate File 1402, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the Health and Human Service Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
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 The motion does prevail. There is no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.
You're already too. See, you got me.